Before we start our episode today, I wanted to talk a little bit more about our favorite Needed. Needed isn't just for moms. They've created an incredible supplement to support dads too. From a men's multi, sperm support, to omega-3s, and CoQ10, Needed takes a whole body approach to men's fertility and health. Learn more at thisisneeded.com, and don't forget, our community gets 20% off your first order with code VBACK. Hey everybody, welcome to the VBACK link. This is Megan, and I am so excited that you're here with us today. We have our friend Anna from Sacred Birth International, and seriously, this episode left me with all the feels. I feel like I could just talk to this woman for so long, like forever. I would love to do another episode with her. Anna is a former midwife, a women's work facilitator, yoga teacher, and coach who has spent over a decade holding sacred space for women in circle, one-on-one sessions, and walking alongside women and their families through the transformational rite of passage that is birth. Anna has a depth of embodied wisdom when it comes to both the physiology of birth and the spiritual aspects of birth that combines her knowledge in her own birth work as a spiritual midwife, as well as a mentor for others through her courses and coaching. In her Sacred Birth Work mentorship program, Anna teaches about natural physiological birth and how to hold onto a safe and sacred spiritual birth space. I cannot wait for you guys to listen. So give us one moment after the break here, and we'll dive right in with Miss Anna. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBACK Link podcast. I am a VBACK after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBACK educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBACK, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. All right, Miss Anna, thank you again so much for being here with us today. We just started chatting a little bit before we started recording, and you guys, I'm like really excited to see where this conversation leads. We don't necessarily have a template or, you know, anything that we're going off of. We're just having a conversation today. So welcome to our conversation, you guys, and welcome Anna.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. I love podcasts like your own that has so much storytelling in it, because storytelling is medicine. And I think also this is great that we don't have a template. I actually love going on podcasts and talking just whatever is coming through, you know, because I believe that that's the best way. It's easy to listen to when you just hear this, you know, just people's thoughts, and you get to go on their journey together.
Mm-hmm. I know. I agree. Sometimes, like, when you get on a podcast, you're like, I don't know what we're talking about. And you can kind of feel like, I don't know, overwhelming. And then, like, it just, like you said, it just starts flowing. And it's like, wow, like, that is what our audience needed to hear. That's what our community needed to hear. Because it just came. It just came through. So we did kind of, I will say, we did kind of say, like, oh, let's start with this topic and then we'll see how it goes. And we have a topic, but first, I really, really, really want you to, I don't know, just give us like a brief. I know that's like a whole thing, a whole probably like couple episodes of conversation, but tell us a little bit more about your background and why you are where you are right now today.
Thank you. Yeah, it is hard to summarize that, but I'll try my best. So I'm actually a former midwife. I've decided to step out of the system. I think it's 2 or 3 years ago, I deregistered. I handed in my registration because I don't want to be a part of this really broken maternity system that is causing so much trauma in women. We know, like, statistically, 1 in 3 women have birth trauma. We know that 1 in 20 have PTSD as if they were going to war, right? After birth. And I truly wholeheartedly believe that it's not birth itself causing this trauma. It's not the rite of passage of birth. It is the system that we birth within that is so, it's broken when it comes to handling birth, the rite of passage, physiological birth. It's great at handling surgery, cesareans. It's great at doing cesareans, which is also why so many women end up there, because that's where they're comfortable supporting you, having cesareans, having major abdominal surgery. So, as a midwife who is very holistic, spiritual, don't see a woman as parts, as just this body birthing a baby, but a whole human being. I just couldn't stand it anymore. So I decided to fully step up. Even though I was a home birth midwife for the years before doing that, I still wanted to do that. So I show up today as a mentor, as a founder of Sacred Birth International. I now educate sacred birth workers, which is a birth worker somewhere in between a doula and a midwife, but a totally, its own person, set of skills. And then also I have a business course for birth workers that I'm also really passionate about, teaching them to have successful birth businesses in real life as well as online. And then, of course, I serve women in the birth portal. Of course, I do also childbirth education courses, and I have my own online courses called the Natural Birth Course and the Nourishing Postpartum Course. So I'm very much in the educational realm right now, and that's where I thrive, helping women, whether they're going to have a baby or they want to become a birth worker or they want to have a successful business. And that's my passion right now.
Well, you're what you're doing right now is inspiring so many, and I want to kind of like pinpoint something that you just said, like you're in that like the educational part now where you're serving women in such a different way as a midwife, also educating, I am sure of it. But what you saw, I'm sure, in the system is a huge lack of education on a whole bunch of in a whole bunch of areas. But we as individuals, I know I was, I can't tell you everybody was, I was very uneducated going into my birthing space, my first baby. I just looked at an app and let the app tell me what I should know, you know? And then I did have that cycle of intervention to lead to that diagnosis of failure to progress. And my pelvis is too small. And it is hard because I was angry and I did blame the system. Like they failed me. It's failure to wait, not failure to progress, you know? And here you are now helping so many, including birth workers, have a deeper understanding of, like you said, the rite of like passage birth and like how it can be and how we can make it not help it not be that traumatic experience and helping birth workers be successful so they can go out and help people. I mean, that's how I feel about our community. I love seeing doulas go out and touch other lives through their love and holding space for them. So with all that education that you're bringing to the table now, you know, we were talking about the one of the main diagnoses what's the right word? Diagnoses. The labels that we are given is failure to progress in the cesarean world. And right before we started recording, I just loved some of the things you said about this. So can we talk a little bit more about failure to progress? What it means, what you saw from the medical side of things, like when you were in the system, when and why those diagnoses would be given. And then can we take a really steep, deeper dive look into the other side of that diagnosis?
Well, first of all, I get goosebumps talking about this because it really also it infuriates me the language that is
I
being
know.
used, because failure to progress is a label put on the woman that she failed. I mean, I right now I have like goosebumps. Just I get so frustrated and
Same.
angry and sad. There's grief. There's so much involved in that label that is so it's so deeply wrong. It's just wrong on so many levels. There's no failure to progress. It is
No,
truly a failure of the system. Truly, when it comes to that diagnosis, and it should be called that.
I know. Yeah, I was 12 hours into my labor at 3 centimeters and told I could never do it. My body just was failing, failing to progress. And it was like, wait, but I'm a first-time mom, and like, my body's doing it. It's just not doing it to your timeline.
And there is, this is the thing which I teach, obviously in my sacred birth work, is that there is like the variation of normal is so varied,
It is.
right? And especially as you walk into the hospital system, there's almost no room for that variation. And let's face it too, especially in the US, most women walking into the hospital system don't go in spontaneous labor. Most are being induced in some way, shape, or form, right? They're either having a stretch and sweep, or they're doing their natural induction techniques, or they're going for, the balloon or the this and that and the other. There's this stress around 40 weeks or even before to get
Well,
going.
before this is, it's happening earlier and earlier. And our doula clients, they're offering things starting around 37 weeks.
That's insane.
Why are we messing with the cervix at 37 weeks? I
Yeah,
just
both the
do
mama
not
and the
understand.
baby. If a
I
mama and baby don't spontaneously go into labor like some do at 37 weeks, which is very few percentage
know.
of the
Very
whole,
few.
very few that that's normal for, if they don't do that, the baby's not ready. The mother's not ready. Her body, her spirit, her psyche, her emo, like all her bodies. I'm talking all of them, right?
Everything.
Not just her physical being, right? But and also the baby. And so we're actually, we're kicking out babies too early from the womb, left, right, and center.
I
Like
know.
they're
I don't
not
understand
ready.
it.
They're
I
not
never.
ready. It's not like, oh yeah, as soon as the cervix opens, the baby's ready. No. They talk to each other. Actually, truly, we don't know what starts natural, physiological, spontaneous labor to start, but what we understand more and more is that really it's the baby deciding. And if we understand that the baby's deciding, what the beep are we doing to babies, right? Inducing them like we are today. Whether that is you yourself taking castor oil, and manipulating that. I mean, because that is an
Pumping.
induction. It really is, right? Or the stretch and sweep, the vaginal exam, doing that. Like we have to really be honest with this, and there's time and place for induction. I'm not saying it isn't, but at the rate today that women are going in for it, no. And it is also, I think, absolutely 100% the leading cause of failure to progress, because you're starting a system off, both a baby that's not ready and a woman's that's not ready. You're forcing them to start. Of course, so many of them will not complete that journey. They weren't ready. It wasn't time.
And there's so much pressure. So you're mentioning like castor oil, or people go on pump, or we see it all the time in our community. You guys, I'm getting close to my 40-week mark and my doctor won't induce me, and they're saying I have to have my baby by 40 weeks. So please help me. I'm 38 weeks. Tell me all the things I can do. And I just want to say, wait and love your body and your baby and hold on. It's okay. Like, cherish this time. You don't need to feel rushed and pressured, but there's a whole other thing. So not only like is our body not ready, like our brains are being forced to feel that we have to be ready. And so we just, I don't know, I feel like we fight. Like it's like a fight in our brains. Like we have to be ready, but we're not ready. But we have to be ready, or we're gonna have to have a C-section, or we're gonna have to be induced, or that, you know what I mean? And instead of just like being in this beautiful moment, pregnancy is beautiful. Is it always comfortable? No, it's not. It's really not. Like, I want to say that it is, but it's not. But it's such a beautiful thing. And for us to force, feel forced or force the ending, I feel is lessening our experience of the journey of pregnancy.
Absolutely. And so much is happening in those last few weeks and days, even for the baby, obviously, so much. Like every day is giving so much for that brain development, for that nervous system development for that baby. And putting on more fat is a good thing for that baby. Like all of these things are
It's
good.
another thing. We're
Yeah, not a
also
thing.
being feared of the size of our babies. Now, and
Absolutely.
women of strength, I don't want you to like take this of like you got induced, so you were bad, or like you made a poor choice, or you're thinking of being induced and you're making a poor choice. This is just like a pretty deep dive conversation into like, let's look at this deeper. And we, like you were saying, like I've seen it specifically as a doula. I saw it before, but then COVID happened. And these inductions, like, boom, like, yeah, like straight up. And I was like, what is going on? And when I was as a doula, I was like, is this because we like control?
Yes.
And I feel like the answer in that is yes. Like, the system likes control. And if we can control who's coming in, specifically during COVID, it was like, oh, I can test them, know they're negative before they come in, you know? But it was like, I can control this. This is going to come in. We're going to do this. We'll do these. We'll see how it goes. If not, we'll do this.
You know, it all comes from love, and I really want to say that
It
because,
does.
of
Yeah.
course, the system itself, I really do feel causes so much trauma and so much negativity. And, you know, I don't want to say it's evil, but like the system itself is not good. But the people within it are. Like,
Good.
people within
Yes.
it want to do good. And they're under the illusion. I've been a part of this system, so I know they're under the illusion that more control, more intervention, especially we see this in the US, is going to save more women and babies. But actually, what is happening is that it's actually doing the opposite. The statistics are actually really bad in the US, right? Because of this over-medicalization, it's actually causing more death and more morbidity amongst women and babies. And so it's not helping, it's doing the opposite. But it's this cramp-like tightening, like, I just want to help you so much, I'm going to like smother you. It's like, you know, this overprotective mother kind of, you know,
Yeah,
which is causing the
micromanager.
opposite, right? Yes. And it's not causing better outcomes, actually, the opposite. Because you know what? Let's face it, nature is not stupid. She's quite wise. And we have been designed, you know, our evolution has designed us beautifully. Life has designed us beautifully. You know, we have gone through so many hundreds and thousands of years, right? With this, we can birth babies. We wouldn't be here if our mothers, our grandmothers, and our whole lineage, our maternal lineage, had not birthed us successfully. Like,
Yeah.
why all of a sudden do we doubt that?
I know. Because
Right?
we have been fogged. Like, in a way, there's like a fog and we've lost the way and we gotta like crawl through the fog and find the way again. But
Like
it
that.
seems like the fog has gotten thicker and thicker and
It's
thicker.
getting worse and worse. It is.
It is, and I keep wanting to say it's gonna get better, it's gonna get better, and then I see this other turn and I'm like, no, because I don't know, I don't even know 0.2% of the world personally, but I want the best for all of them in a way of like I really want them to experience the birth that they were born to be, you know, experiencing. And I just know that so many times they are going to be failed. They are not
Yeah.
going to fail. They are going to be failed.
Exactly. So another thing I wanted to say about before we went on a different tangent, which I love because I go on tangents all the time, is that it's not just the baby preparing, you know, with the development in the before labor starts. It's also the woman's getting more and more oxytocin receptors, which is so important. Yes. So when we induce early, when we induce when a woman's not ready, she doesn't have enough of those oxytocin receptors either.
Okay,
Right?
so the closer we get to our due date, I don't
Yeah,
think I
the
knew that.
body, well, it's not even the due date, it's your quote unquote due date. It's
Oh,
like your person,
you're
right? Because you know what I mean? Like
right, because a due
the
date's
actual
not
due
really a
date.
thing.
It's like, yes, it's like your unique body. Like just as your vagina, about 3 weeks before you give birth, gets more juicy and does that beautiful thing that's going to cover the baby's head and give the immunity through the floor, through the mother. That happens as you come closer to birth. Every day, you get more and more oxytocin receptors, which will help you both get stronger, more powerful, productive contractions, but also, right, the love hormone that's going to go through your blood-brain barrier and cause those amazing, beautiful feelings of love, of bonding, of connection, of also, you know, together with other hormones, causing that feeling of altered state of consciousness. All of these things, you need to build the oxytocin receptors. So we're also stealing that experience from women. Inducing too early. And also, of course, if she doesn't have enough receptors, how can she also then birth a baby,
Birth a
right?
baby,
It makes
yeah.
sense, right? And so it's also so weird when this makes sense and so logical, it's also very scientific that our whole community in the hospital don't see this as very obvious. Because it's again, it's the fear-based, you know, maternity system that wants to control and prevent, you know,
Yeah.
stillbirth, which again, of course, no one wants to have a baby that
No.
is going to be born still ever. But when we actually look at the statistics, it is so minuscule the way that it increases, minuscule compared to the actual trauma that is caused to both babies and women. And let's face it, babies pass because of interventions as well, and
They do.
mothers. So, you need to look at this because it, for some women, they're going to be like, I want to be induced because this risk is real to me and I don't want to risk that. Okay, that's fine. As you said, there's no judgment here. Just know your pros and cons. Just know the actual stats around things, which actually women don't, just like you said, because the education is not there.
It's really not. And, kind of like we were saying earlier, like our providers, the people in the system, they mean well, they want well. Like I've said this so many times. I do not believe that they go in with ill will. Like they
No.
really don't, but they are. They're over the, they've got this umbrella over them, and there's this, again, it's this fog, and they also get into autopilot. And as we were saying, not one person is just like someone else. And so someone might not be responding as fast in labor and then someone else, And
Absolutely.
the it's just, I feel like it's, we're conditioned to be like, oh, well, they're not progressing as fast as this sheet says a woman should progress, so we better do these things. So can we look a little deeper into failure to progress?
Yes, sure. What do you want to know about it? I mean, there's
Well,
so much to say.
when, okay, so let's start. I want to go from like what you saw on the medical side of things to like what you think it maybe, well, I think I know your answer, but where, what it really means. And then how also we talked a little bit like how we as individuals, as the birthing mother, could look at things even deeper in our role of that, with our role of that.
Yes, absolutely. So we, most women, I don't know, 90, depending on which country, 95, 99% of women walk into hospital to birth their babies because that is perceived as most, that's most safe. It's most normal. It's just what you do, and just like
Convenient,
you.
cheapest.
Oh yeah, of course. And you don't have alternatives, all of these things. And so that is where women are gonna, unfortunately, I say birth, because it's not gonna be the best place to birth, truly, because that system doesn't know how to support physiological birth. Now, as we said, most women don't even get to there. And we already talked about, when you get induced, you're already an uphill battle. If you aren't really favorable for that, if your cervix hasn't started opening, you're actually really just around the corner of going into labor yourself, which we don't know. Especially, I mean, obviously, it's different first time moms and second times and so on and so forth. Some, like second time moms and beyond, who've had a baby before, can walk around for weeks with like being 3 centimeters open, 5 centimeters open. Centimeters doesn't tell us a lot because you can be that open and not be in labor, especially if you've had babies. Not maybe so often if you are a first time mom, but even so, you can actually also be quite favorable. Anyways, if you go in the induction route, which unfortunately so many do, you're just so likely to fail that induction. You're so likely to get that failure to progress diagnosis because, again, they're trying to push your body and your baby into labor before you're actually ready. So your body's not going to respond. It's not going to respond to that, to the drip with oxytocin. It's not going to respond to all the interventions. Most likely also in that system, your primal body, your primal brain's not going to feel safe with strangers and bright lights and all the things. I think your clients and your listeners know this already, like the most obvious things that interfere with natural labor progression, right?
Or even just like the things hooked to you. Like you've got something on your belly, something on your arm, something on fingers, like
I mean, it's insane.
it's constant noises that you're unfamiliar with, voices down the hall. There's a lot that goes into it.
But even if you were one of these rare women who actually goes into spontaneous labor and goes, okay, and especially first-time moms, because first-time moms tend to go into hospital sooner. Because what happens when you go into labor, when you're in this first stage, when you're having irregular contractions and you're still in the early stages of labor, that is the time when we are primed as women to find our safe space to birth. And so women go into hospital because that's what they've been told is a safe place to birth. They want to go where they're going to birth their babies. Unfortunately, the triage in the US usually will check them and go, you're only 1 centimeter, or you're not even this and that, whatever. Go back home. They send them home, right? Or they offer induction techniques as well, I'm guessing. But usually here in Europe, usually they're sent home. And then they go back home and they go back and forth. Sometimes first-time moms two, three times before they're quote-unquote in active labor. They're somewhere around 3 to 6 centimeters open. That's what's classified depending on where you are in the world and what hospital and all of that. She's now admitted to the birth suite. She's allowed to stay.
And they'll
So
tell
this
us
is,
that
oh
too.
my God, this is a dance that then a first-time mama has to do, usually a few times before she actually is accepted to go in there, right? And you know, this is also a mechanism to protect her from the freaking system that's going to harm her. So it's the system putting up a protection for the mother, actually. Don't come in too early because you're too early. We're going to do stuff to you that's not necessary. But it's a dance that's going to happen because that's what you do in early labor. You want to find your safe place to birth. And so I think a lot of women also kept in this early stage longer than they need to because they're going back and forth in the car or in the taxi and they're getting themselves out of their primal birthing brain. Yeah. But if they are one of these women who do finally come in spontaneous labor, very few women do that, especially in the US, come in spontaneous labor, have started on their own. They're going to be so interfered with there, just like you said. They're going to want to put an IV in your hand, have your own CTG, do all these things to you, maybe want to break your waters, do all these things to push things along. Again, this is interfering with your hormones. So it might actually do the absolute opposite. It might make things stronger, more painful, but it's not going faster. It might even go slower because your body is going into fight and flight, going into stress, not feeling safe. And for birth, as I'm sure everyone knows, safety, feeling safe, and that's not safe like medically safe. That's feeling that primal sense of like, I'm undisturbed, I'm loved, I'm with people that love me, support me, I'm not going to be disturbed. That is the safety I'm talking to. And that doesn't happen in the hospital system.
I mean, from at least here in the US, when you go into the hospital, when you're finally ready to go there, the very first thing they want to do when you get there is stick their fingers in your cervix,
Yeah.
which to me is so jarring and alarming that
Yes.
you have to enter the space that you feel safe in, or that you're thinking that you feel safe in. But then someone's immediately entering way too deep into your space.
Yeah.
And then what happens to that body? You know, even if you go into spontaneous labor
Yes. Goes
and
into
then.
shutdown. And especially if you, like so many women in our society has sexual trauma. We have to realize that, like, you know, the statistics varies, but like 1 in 4 at least, you know, have that. And so that's a lot of women. And so that's also playing a huge part in which we will talk about too, like that not opening in labor, not feeling safe, and doing vaginal examinations is the most intimate thing. And you have to do that. You have to consent to being essentially fingered by a stranger to be allowed into your safe space to birth. I mean, when you say it like that, it sounds shocking, but it is shocking and it
But it
should shock
is, and
you.
that's what it
It should
is.
shock you. Yes. You know, and the thing is, so if you don't birth in the hospital, I know, you know, most of the people listening to this will want to do that or have done that. But if you don't do that, so I've, you know, had the privilege of working in birth centers and at homes, right? Home births. So I've seen this, you know, the variation of normal, first and foremost, so much more than you ever see in the hospital because they don't allow it. But also there in those settings, all of this doesn't happen. And women might have one or none vaginal examinations during the full maybe 12 hours we're together, right? There's no CTG on their bellies. There might be intermittent auscultation with a Doppler or even with like a Pinard, you know, and the woman is totally in her right and very much so respected with everything she wants or don't want in that space. There absolutely is no cannula. There's absolutely no fluids. There's no saying you can't eat or drink. You know, it's really
Yeah, it's more
upholding the
encouraging
normal. Yes, it's
that.
upholding the normal. So like, you know, I'm going to be controversial maybe to your listeners and say like, if you want a VBAC, I would say go for HBAC. Go for a home birth after cesarean. You're much more likely to succeed having a VBAC, HBAC, in the home where you get to be in your safety of your home. You have your medical safety with the midwives present, and you can be fully like a cat, go into your safe little cupboard somewhere, you know, safe dark place, usually the toilet, and just birth your baby. Just birth your baby.
Yeah, just do what your body was created to do. You
Yeah.
know, when I chose to go to the birth center for my VBAC after two C-sections, I had to keep that very near and dear and close because I found really quickly as I started talking about it, and I am naturally an oversharer. So I just overshare everything. So I just naturally would like overshare my plan, and I kept getting slapped in the face, like to put it frank, you know, I would like almost be like, wait, what? Like every time I'd leave a conversation, and I finally realized like I can't talk about this to people because they don't understand, they don't want to understand, they are coming from a good place. But they have this fear because of what they think they know. And so I did. I kept that really close. And yeah, it was beautiful. It was a beautiful birth. But there were so many things that came up even in that birth from my other births, even though I thought I had processed them. Things that people said to me, things that were done. That came up, and my labor was going kind of slow. I did have a posterior baby, so that helped, but like mentally, there was a lot that I had to work through and kind of like you said, like get in that dark, cozy place where I felt safe and comfortable to birth. So, how can we as women get into that space? Because, in a lot of ways, in my labor, I feel like I was holding myself back. Truly holding myself back. And it wasn't until many hours later where I just had this like, and it was on the toilet, interestingly enough. It was just this huge mental, physical release. And then it wasn't soon after that that I had my baby, you know. But for so many hours, I think I was kind of holding things and I had a lot of tension. So are there things that we as individuals can contribute to, which you kind of said some of this with failure to progress, where we just holy, maybe, you know, sexual abuse survivors, or we're in a space where we're just so tense. But is there anything, are there anything else or anything that you would say like we need to try to like tune into?
It's I really want everyone to hear this, that most likely most women who have cesareans in our modern society, I would say, did not need it. It wasn't actually a truly emergency one. Some do, absolutely, and that's why we have amazing surgeons that can do that. But most don't. Most are failure to progress, which is not an emergency and is usually a failure of the system. But then we also have these other aspects, which when I have clients who come to me who want to have a VBAC, well, any client, to be honest, it's not just the VBAC, but these are the things that I kind of ask all my clients, but especially also go into with the VBAC ladies. So I look through when they've had a previous cesarean, I look through their birth notes, right? So I have obviously that knowledge as a midwife. I can read the notes and I can understand what's happened and what's unfolded. And most of the time, and this is what I do in birth debriefs too, I would say 99% of the time, I can tell them exactly why this unfolded. It was usually the cascade of interventions that caused the eventual trauma, whatever that is, whether that is a cesarean or not. And then there's like this 1% that's like, actually, this was a
This was
true
really
emergency. You know what I
needed.
mean? So when we go through that, I can also see, so I can see what was it the system that did this to you? And I can also validate that for them so they realize truly that it wasn't their bodies that failed, it was the system. And that's really important to understand as you've had a, you know, a cesarean, to realize it wasn't you that failed, because we as women, we blame ourselves. I mean, we do that naturally. Thank you, estrogen, but we do that naturally, very self-critical, right? But also on top of that, the system blames us with that diagnosis. So we hold it very, it's a shameful thing we hold. So first we have to also look at that and bring you out of the shame and realize it wasn't your fault, first and foremost. But then I also flip it and I go, but there's always also an aspect of let's look at what you contributed to this. And of course, there we have a myriad of usually there's always the good girl. Right? The trusting the authority or not being able to speak up to authority, just saying yes and trusting the expert. That's a big part that usually a lot of women have, that we play the good girl in life and we have to be slapped several times before we go, like, okay, I'm now lioness. I'm ready to step into my mama bear, right? I'm ready to be sovereign in my life, right? And sometimes they need several births for that to happen to a woman, right? Some are before birth of her baby. But for most women, we have to somehow go through that to wake up to the reality that I'm a sovereign human being and I have rights and I can say no. So a lot of women will hold a good girl and the people pleaser very strongly within their first labor, second labor, and could be also that contributor, right, to allowing that system to do what it did to you. We have obviously this, subconscious, unconscious things that we are maybe semi-aware of or not aware of, which are our fears and our belief systems. We have been fed our whole life that birth is dangerous through Hollywood and media and through the ever-growing medicalized birth system that is telling us so. So everyone, the experts, the doctors, many midwives, TV series, everything is depicting birth as traumatic and as dangerous, and usually the woman is out of control, and usually a male doctor saves her. That's what we've been fed. So our subconscious and unconscious believes that, and we have to remember that. So even if we are like wanting a natural birth, or we want to in hospital birth center or home or whatever, we have to remember that we've been programmed. It doesn't matter if you think here in your awake brain going like, yeah, no, I believe in birth, I believe in my body. But what does your subconscious tell you? And this is where storytelling is so potent and powerful, and why I love your podcast that's telling these stories of women succeeding in their VBAC. Because if you want a VBAC, you want to listen only to positive VBAC stories. You do not want to hear anything else. If you're like going for a natural birth, then you listen to the Natural Birth podcast, which is my podcast, which only features natural birth stories that are positive, right? Everywhere. Birth center, hospital, and home. You only feed your mind because that's how you rewire it. So that's a really important part in all of this, is to rewire your subconscious mind. Only get those stories fed the whole pregnancy as you now are preparing for your VBAC. But also, what other fears are there? So I've seen my clients who want to have a certain birth outcome and who potentially then have had previous cesareans. I recently had a client who've had as a recent a cesarean, and she did everything right, quote unquote. She did the education, and she planned a home birth. She had a home birth midwife. She did everything right, except look at her fears. She was so scared of facing that within her, and so it showed up in birth. She was so scared of the pain, and she. We are, and the thing is, we're so bloody powerful. We really are. Our minds are so powerful that she went into early labor and kept on stalling and stalling for 5 days before she ended up having a second cesarean. Right? And so that is the power of our fears. And that's why I wanted to share this story because of that. So we need to dare to do the inner work. We need to dare to sit in meditation, with journaling, with meeting our fears, with daring to cry, to grieve, to feel all the feelings. Whatever we don't feel in pregnancy will come and interfere in labor and birth. It'll show its ugly face. It will. And I've seen that time and time again with women who are dissociating or not facing what they truly need to face. I fill in the blank. There's like women who want to have a home birth and that's so scared of the hospital, so that they manifest transferring to the hospital because of their fear. They're so strong that they actually do it. They go there because that's the only thing that they've kind of in their subconscious mind has been like visioning somehow. So like whatever your fear is, or the opposite, that you're fearing that you're going to birth on the way to hospital. So you do. So look at your fears, face them, and be okay with them. I work a lot with that with women, like putting strategies in place and like, so what if your absolute worst nightmare happened? Let's face it. Let's talk about it. Let's not avoid it. What can we do to make even the worst okay? Like, how can we do the best thing of the absolute worst scenario? So then the power that holds over you lessens a bit and you're not as hung up on that fear. Right? And then we have what we talked about before, women who've experienced sexual assault, some sort of sexual trauma. That can very well resurface in labor and birth. And for anyone listening right now, you might go like, wow, that was me. That's why I had a cesarean. because I had like the vaginal examinations, or just actually feeling the contractions, or in the end when we bear down the baby, when the baby's supposed to go through the birth canal, that's usually where we hold trauma if we had sexual trauma. Maybe that just was too much, and I went into become re-traumatized, and I closed up, and I couldn't birth my baby. Right? And so it's important, if you know who's listening, that this is you, that one, you tell your care providers, like you tell your midwife, so that they know. I mean, I don't think anyone should have as many routine vaginal examinations as happening today, but definitely not a sexual assault survivor who has so much trauma in this area, who easily will dissociate from her body if being touched there with not her partner who's loving her, her husband, or you know what I mean? And so there should be awareness around this. And if your midwife or doctor think that you know, that's not an issue, then you should change providers to someone who has trauma-informed care and understands how to care for a woman who's had this experience. And you should have a doula who's informed about this, or you should go with home birth or birth center midwives who are, just by their nature and how they work, so much better for these kind of women, right? But this can definitely, I've had clients who, I had one client who had two cesareans before she worked with me and finally had her vaginal birth, who we could identify within her birth notes and talking about and debriefing her births, that the sexual trauma really played in to why she didn't birth her baby vaginally the first few times. Because the first birth especially, she got re-traumatized. She had waves of memories coming up throughout her labor. She was
I've
like
heard of that.
experiencing it. Yes. And so this is really important to realize. And if this is your experience and you know that was probably a leading factor, maybe the full factor to why you ended up in a cesarean the first time, make sure you work on that this time. Get really good care providers that understand this history of yours and will provide care that is appropriate for you.
Having a strong immune system is important, and it can be challenging during these colder months. I found it's hard to find something with clean ingredients that tastes good and doesn't have added sugar. Let me tell you, I can confidently say that I have found it. You guys don't have to look any further. I'm so excited. I highly recommend checking out Needed's Immune Support. Every ingredient is vetted by experts, and it not only includes exactly what you need, but also includes gut health support, which is pretty stinking cool. Did you know that 70% of your immune system resides in your gut? My entire family loves the immune support from Needed, and I bet yours will too. Try it today and get 20% off with the code VBACK. Find the immune support and so much more at thisisneeded.com, and don't forget to use code VBACK for 20% off your first order. All right, let's dive back into today's show. I have a question, and I don't want this to be like too triggering to anybody, but I have a question about epidurals and women who have been sexually assaulted. I had a client a long time ago who had someone that she knew, and she was really that had an experience, and she's really scared of the epidural because she had a way less experience, but like she was worried about this epidural because her friend felt really vulnerable but helpless once she got the epidural because everyone had to move her, like just moving her body. And this person had a way less, nothing's less, that was not right, but like a different situation where it wasn't so much internally, but her body was held down. And so she was really scared of getting an epidural. And I was just curious if you knew if that could be something that could happen in others. And then for someone who is maybe wanting an epidural or maybe doesn't want an epidural but ends up getting an epidural, who may be a survivor of sexual abuse, how they could navigate that. It's like really deep.
Yes, and it's also so complex because everyone's
It
going to be
is.
different. For some, it's going to be the answer to having maybe a vaginal birth, right? Having that epidural is going to help her. And for some, it's going to be the
Relax.
opposite, right? Yes, relax, but also, yeah, not feel as much. I mean, you feel obviously that something's moving through your body, so that doesn't go away even though you take away pain. And let's face it, also sometimes epidurals don't work, and that's also an aspect that you have to be aware of. It's so different what's going to work for each woman. So they, I really encourage with anything that you're choosing in labor and birth, in pregnancy, postpartum, whatever, just going to your own intuition. Your body knows. She's actually really wise. And so instead of looking outside for like stories or statistics or experts or other people's opinions, always check in first with yourself. Why do you want the epidural? And how does your body react thinking about getting an epidural? Is it positive? Are you getting a, stomach clenching or throat clenching? Like you get a response from your body,
Response.
right? Yeah, telling you, I like this or I don't like this. This feels safe, this feels dangerous. And so with every option that you get so many things that you have to decide in pregnancy, for your labor and birth, and in labor and birth, check in with your intuition, your gut feeling, your mama wisdom, your womb wisdom. Like you know. And I would do that here, right, with this question about epidural. So if this is you, like, is it going to help me? What am I trying to avoid? Am I really scared of the pain? Looking at all the things, why am I choosing an epidural? There's so many reasons to want epidural and not want epidural. And just choose what's right for you. But yes, of course, because you will get numb and not be able to move. But this is also, I'm sure there's places in the US where you can get a walking epidural. So for example, in the country I live in right now, which is Sweden, all epidurals are walking epidurals. No one's stuck to the bed. People can walk around with them.
No, they say that these things exist, but I haven't seen one in the US.
Yeah, and so it's really provider, their
Based.
choice, what they
Is it a
do and their
lower
skill.
epidural, like lower dose, or is it a
No.
different placement?
No, it's the same placement. It's just, I guess, different dose for sure. It's
Dose.
lighter. And it's just, I guess, given, yeah, I mean, I'm not this is hard to say, anesthesiologist. How do you say
Anesthesiologist?
that? I
Yeah.
always, it's so hard. I'm not one of these people who knows how to do this, but yeah, so there's so many countries now offer this. And I'm sure some places in the US, but obviously the majority doesn't. And I think it's just, again, it's the control of a woman, and why change something that works? And women are obviously not asking for it, so why change something that works? But that would obviously be an option for someone who felt that way, right? To have a walking epidural, a light epidural where she can stand up, she can move, she can go to the toilet herself, she doesn't have a catheter, all these things, right?
I know it's like a deep, and I when as we were talking about that, I thought about that. Like, I don't know. It's crazy. It's crazy how our body can. It's actually beautiful how our body can respond and, like you said, have the power to get a baby out and keep a baby in if we're not feeling safe.
And I think also because of this strong fear mongering around birth and the pain, we're missing out on the truth that actually that doesn't have to necessarily be true. And so when you go into natural labor, your hormones help you, especially if you support those hormones. So don't not interfere them by going to the hospital too soon, or really, my preference, not at all, but if you wanna go late, and really build these beautiful hormones of, your own opioids and oxytocin that will also mitigate your sensation of pain, right? And the more you can lean in to the pain, the more you can lean into the sensation, the more you can really surrender to it, which really a lot of people say don't like that word surrender. But surrender is not passive, it's active. You're choosing it. It's a powerful move of surrendering to the sensation, of allowing the force of life to come through you. When you do that, you work with it. You're not a victim to it. And the reason why so many people feel so much pain in labor and birth is because of the fear, tension, pain cycle. Right? The fear creates the tension creates the pain creates the fear, and then we're stuck in that loop, which I saw so much in the hospital. Why also I got so enraged, and I was like, I want to teach women about the physiology, about natural births. That's why I created a natural birth course, was because of my own frustration that I saw as a midwife in the system, and I wanted to help them before they go in there to realize how they can support their womb, how their womb works, how she actually does close and shut off when she feels fear and stress and adrenaline, right? Anyways, there's lots to say about that.
Can we talk a little bit about, okay, so there are many people who have shared their story on the podcast. I know many clients, and I see a lot in the birthing community talking about regression of cervix. And I know sometimes that can be from a cervix that's disturbed by being played with too much. But can we talk a little bit about regression of cervix? Like, can we mental like we can mentally regress our cervix, right?
I have this one really just a so strong experience of this one woman who she was suffering from white coat syndrome. So like feeling getting high blood pressure and get anxious in hospitals and by
Responding.
And so she came to the birth center that I was at, and we saw her in the home to do all her antenatal appointments, but she wanted to birth in the hospital, not at home, or not hospital, sorry, a birth center. But she really suffered from this, and it really showed up in labor. Her anxiety showed up. So she came in and she was laboring beautifully, and I don't know, at some point there was a vaginal examination and she was 5 centimeters, and then maybe 4 or 5 hours later, and then she was 7. Or was she 7 and then 5? Sorry. So she was 7 when she came in, sorry. So she was 7 centimeters. And then like 4 hours later, we were expecting her to like have progressed, right? But she actually went down to 5 centimeters. So she came in more open and she closed when she was there because she started spiraling. Around 7, after 7, that's where we enter into more intensity and we go into like transition phase, you know, which can last forever long. And, you know, for some women, that's a blip, and for some women, that's hours, especially if you don't lean into the pain, surrender, and allow what comes to come. Right? If you what you resist persists. I really want everyone to like remember this,
What you
right?
resist persists.
Yes. So that's why you can stay at 3 centimeters for 10 hours, right? Or for 24 hours, even though you even have synthetic oxytocin, like Pitocin drip. Women will, and on epidurals. That's how strong the mind is. That's how strong how the subconscious mind is. That's how strong our bodies are when they're not ready to not open, right? If you don't feel safe. So, yes. So, sorry, my story was that this woman came in and she was 7 centimeters. We're like, yay. And then she regressed to 5. And I think this is a really important story because, yes, our minds are that powerful and we do control our cervix. We do affect our whole body system. We're not separate. Mind and body's not separate. It's just not. However much doctors want to believe that somehow, we're just not. And we can't just put a drip up and say, now you should open 1 centimeter an hour. No. Some women
No.
just won't. They just won't. A lot of women won't, actually. And so it's a very faulty system to believe in. But yes, we definitely can. And I think that happens when women feel at home, like, oh, I need to go into hospital now. It's really like starting to get strong. And they move into hospital and everything slows down. And when they come in, they're only 3 centimeters or whatever. Maybe back home, they were 5. Maybe they were 6, right? And then they regressed down because they moved. And that is the intelligence of our actual body. It's the intelligence, right, of birth. That we're supposed to be where we feel most safe. So things will stop, slow down, and you know, we can still have contractions, but nothing happens down below because we're not safe yet to birth. It's very primal.
I've noticed like a like we have to act reacclimate when from home to hospital or and sometimes even home to birth center.
Yeah,
It
of course.
makes
Every time you
them
leave your home,
anytime
yes.
we leave, you know, it's like we have to reacclimate. And I, you know, it's kind of interesting that you point that out. Like they could have been 5 at home and now they're 3 or she was 7 and then she went to 5. And it's like it's not that it's a problem. Like you're doing something bad that's make or some, you know, something bad is happening. Because I feel like in the system we are trained to think regression is bad and that is going to lead to a cesarean. But like, do we dare to look deeper into this? Why did my labor just change? Why am I responding differently in this new place? What is it in this new environment that I need to eliminate? Or you know, or I need more of to get back into that safe space so my cervix can be allowed to open back up and melt away.
You know, really, a woman coming into hospital, they should wait at least an hour for her to settle in before they do even that check, you know? Yeah, just leave her alone. Let
And
her go inside the birth room and get comfy and feel at home and bring her pillow and get her, fake lights on, whatever she needs, her music. And then when she's safe and she's feeling comfortable.
if she wants it, that's another thing. There's
Oh, yeah.
so many times where it's not that they want it, but they feel like they have to have it because they need their number. They need their starting point to understand where you are, to understand if you're progressing in a great way or not, so they can either not give you that failure to progress
Yeah.
or give you that failure to progress.
Exactly. What we have to realize too is that a woman who comes in and says no to everything and just has a natural birth, but that takes 24 hours because she's maybe coming in really early and she's just allowing the physiology to unfold. You don't earn money from a natural birth, let's be honest. You don't. So you want a woman to birth within a shorter amount of time, and you really also want to give her all the things that you can earn money from, and you earn a lot of money from a cesarean, by the way. But a natural vaginal birth without anything else, that's not a lot of money for the hospital. And so that's also a part of the equation to why things are done the way they're done. And yeah, it's a factory also. They don't have place for you to be there for too long. You're taking up space, right? They want to push you through, especially if you're going to have vaginal birth. Oh my God, push you through. Max 10 hours, not more. Push you through, push you through. Okay, not now. Cesarean. Yeah, great. Ka-ching. Great. A new person coming in. New person. 10 hours, 10 hours. No, ka-ching. New. This is how it works. It really does.
It is sad and scary and disgusting in so many ways. And I don't want to just like shit on the system completely because there are really great things that happen in the hospital. Do not get me wrong. But I do feel like we need to really take a huge step back out of the fog and see what feels right for us. Like you said, like go internal, check in. What feels right. And I feel like once we tune into that, if a hospital really does feel right, okay, let's learn how to navigate your experience through the hospital and create the best experience possible. You know, so yeah, birth is so beautiful. It's a wild, beautiful, crazy journey, but it doesn't need to leave us feeling traumatized and heartache and doubt and question. And I know there's so many of our amazing community members who have been left feeling doubt and failure and fear. And I want you guys, women of strength, I want you to know that like you shouldn't have to fear what your body knows what to do. Because you are incredible.
And if you are choosing to have a VBAC in the hospital, you need to bring a kick-ass birth advocate. Like, you need a VBAC doula. You need someone who understands VBAC and who can advocate for all the things that will support you to have that. And I really recommend that you really understand all the routines so that you can actively decline all the things that will disturb your physiology to be able to have the VBAC you want, which is
Yeah,
almost everything.
I know. Education is so powerful. It really is so powerful. Even if along the way you decide to choose something that you maybe not didn't think you would choose before, you need to be an active participant in your birth and not just have someone come in and say, you need to do this, you need to do that. We are going to do this. Always, always make sure that it is a really open communication on both sides, not just someone telling you. You know, you mentioned about earlier about people pleasers, which I would say I'm definitely a people pleaser too in certain situations. And so
I think
another,
most women are.
yeah, in other certain situations I'm like, oh no, like no, I'm gonna fight back. But when we tend to people please, I feel like disregard ourselves, and it's a disservice to ourselves in many ways. And so if we can have that information, I feel like we are a little bit more equipped maybe to not people please because we know the information. And if it doesn't feel right for us, we can say like, hold on, or actually I don't feel comfortable with that right now. You know, you don't have to go in and just be like, hell no to everything. It can be like really nice and collaborative. It doesn't have to just be like you against them. But sometimes it is, and how it ends up being.
And you shouldn't have to take that fight. That's why you should always have a birth advocate with you in the hospital that knows what you want and can advocate for you so you can stay in your birth bubble. I think that's so important.
Yeah, I seriously wish so badly with both of my hospital births, but with especially with my first VBAC, I wish that we would have hired the doula because in the end of my birth, before I walked down to the OR for the second time, I was put in a corner, flat out put in a corner, me against the world. And I've shared this in my story, but I really that's when I don't remember feeling another contraction. Because my body was like, nope, I'm not feeling safe enough to do this anymore because I was cornered and told all these things, you know? And if we don't feel safe, we need to tune into why. And it's okay to stand up for yourself and or turn to your advocate and be like, this is how I'm feeling. How can you help me?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that what's really important for all the people pleasing women out there is to really step into the role of mother. So whatever is done to you, how they're speaking to you, what they want to do to you, whatever they're doing to your baby. So, like, if it's hard to stand up for yourself, stand up for your baby because you are one, Mama Toto, you are one, right? You and your baby are one. So, everything you're feeling, all the love, but all the stress, everything feeling, experiencing, your baby is experiencing too. So, like, step into Mama Lioness and know that your no is not no for you, it's no for your baby as well. And it's sometimes easier for women to go into that role to get become that fierce kind of advocate for themselves when they realize they're not just advocating for themselves, they're advocating for their baby.
Yeah, that's powerful right there. Because I think so, women specifically, in so many ways, like we will take a step back and suffer, I quote unquote, but suffer if it means, you know, a gain for someone else, like our child or loved one. So it's really interesting that you just put it like that. Like, not only are you really, really advocating, like you are one. You're advocating not only for you, but for your baby in this moment. And if you're not willing to advocate for you, advocate for your baby. Wow. Wow. Well, you are amazing. Is there anything else that you would like to share with our beautiful community?
Just that I really want you to know it was never your fault.
Yes, me too.
You know, it
I.
really wasn't.
No. It sucks, you guys, how many of us leave feeling like a failure or like it was us. It's easier to put blame, sometimes I feel like in the medical world, on the birthing mom.
Yeah, all the time. All the time. It's kind of built on that. Like even looking at their, you know, just the way they say the diagnosis of failure to progress, but also like just look at incompetent cervix. Like some women get incompetent.
Yes.
What the beep? Like just the language is from start to finish. It's terrible. It's not woman-centered. It's not for women. It's not for babies. It's not for families. It's for the medical white coat system. To like, you know, it's a, and I think it's also been developed because of litigation. And like, you know, if we tell her she failed, she won't sue us, right? If she takes it
We give
on,
her a
she
reason that her body failed.
and we saved her. So if we make sure she
Oh,
believes we saved her,
yes.
right, then we can continue doing the system. And I don't think it's conscious. It's just become this machine that just keeps on
Like I
going and
said,
earns stock.
autopilot.
Earn stock owners lots of money, but on the like detriment of humanity, truly. I mean, and that's why I do what I do, and I'm sure why you do what you do, is the love of humanity. I believe that peace on earth starts with birth, and I really see how our world is the way it is because I really believe because of how we treat women and children, especially at the moment of birth. If women were honored truly for what they do on this planet, everything, the bearing of children, the birthing of them, the breastfeeding, just the
Gosh, yes.
self-sacrifice. And you know, sacrifice is sacred gift. It's a sacred gift to the world that women give the world. We're not getting what we should be getting in that moment. The support, the love, the honor, the reverence. being walked through this rite of passage really holistically, like we need.
Yeah. And in so many ways, the birth that we experience impacts not only future births, but like that postpartum experience. And in so many other ways, like we hold on to these experiences and it impacts our lives in many other ways, including potentially future births if we don't work through these traumas and these fears and these doubts and these labels.
And also, it kind of this way of maternity system right now is producing broken women, broken mothers for years, potentially for life. I have had birth debrief with 60-year-old women who cry with me and share their birth stories and the violations to them. And so we have this, half of the population who births babies. A lot of them come out feeling absolutely broken and very much for years to come before maybe they pick themselves up and, come back from that. And this is a detriment to our earth, to our world, to our humanity that women are treated this way. And also those babies, to those mothers, their imprint, their birth imprint, and their experience as well going forward, right? And maybe their partners, having had going in, which a lot of women do after a birth trauma, into postpartum depression, maybe for a year or years, that affects their marriage or their partnership, and maybe that falls apart. Like, it's just the effects are not just with the woman. It is a
No.
ripple effect in society that we don't have women coming through their birth knowing their power, their divinity, their awesomeness. Instead, they're blamed and said that they failed. That label is worse than the cesarean. The label of
It
having
is.
failed, right? That is what hurts deeply.
Yeah. I remember when I got my op reports, I was reading it and I was just so angry. So angry. And my husband was like, "Honey, we made the best choice based off the information we were given."
Yeah, we
And
did.
so I also want to remind the community, Women of Strength, to offer yourself grace.
Oh,
If
yeah.
you're listening to this and you're like, "That was me. This is what I experienced." And you're maybe feeling that anger that I once felt. I understand that we have to offer ourselves grace, but that doesn't mean for the next birth or from right now moving forward, we can't change the narrative and can't understand deeper that, oh, wait, hold on. I didn't fail. No,
No.
you did not fail. You are not a failure. There's no failing at birth. And truly, no matter how a baby comes out, vaginally or via cesarean, there is no failing at birth. Look at what you just did. You brought a human life into this world. You are a woman of strength. You are so powerful. What you did was incredible. But if you're wanting to go forward, you're wanting to VBAC or HBAC or VBAC after multiple cesareans, know that you can do this. We are here with you. We support you. We believe in you. We will carry this positive, feeling into this atmosphere. But you got to believe yourself too. And you got to do the work on your end. And you got to find that right place that you're feeling safe. And even though it makes sense more financially or logistically, of like going, because maybe you have kids at home. Maybe the hospital seems more like it makes sense, but every time you go there, something doesn't feel right. Like she was saying, tune in. Every decision that you make, every step along the way, tune into that intuition. I mean, if there's anything that we have screamed from 2018 when we started this podcast, it was follow your intuition. It will not steer you wrong. And I truly believe that intuition. It brings this like comfort, but then our minds try to like trickle in and pull fear. And so it's sometimes easy to like be like, no, that's not right because that brings fear versus peace. Do you have, before we let you go, do you have any suggestions or any coaching advice on deciphering that, like feeling that intuition and truly honoring it and not letting the fear come in and mistake it as fear, not intuition.
Intuition, she's soft, she's gentle, she doesn't barge in. She's wise, she's omnipresent, she's always there, and she's usually the absolute first thing you know and feel. We have been lied to our whole life as women that intuition is fluff, fluff, not real, humbug, whatever you want to call it. It's not true. It's our superpower. We as women have a very strong intuition. Our womb gives us that. We have intuition. It's true. And so don't doubt that. And the more you listen to her in the little things every day, the more you listen to your intuition, the stronger she becomes. Don't trust your mind. Your mind should be the servant of your heart, and your heart is intimately connected to your intuition, into your womb space. Your heart lives in the quantum field, in that space in between worlds. No time exists. It knows the future. So listen to your heart, not your brain. Your brain only knows what it knows from books and other people's stories and your lived experience, but your heart is wise, truly wise. So listen to your heart and your womb and your intuition.
Oh my gosh, I don't even feel like I can say anything more. That was chilling and so perfect. And I couldn't have, like, you just nailed it. That was so perfect. Our intuition is wise and soft. I love that. Thank you so much for being here with us today and chatting with our community and daring to dive deeper into the system and how our bodies respond.
Pleasure.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to the vbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to the vbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.